This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Haiti Adams-Fitzpatrick, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The UN World Food Programme says it is alarmed at the prospect of running out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in troubled northeastern Nigeria. The crisis does not just affect Nigeria, the nation's top humanitarian official says. It impacts families across the Lake Chad Basin.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. We'll have the full story coming up.
Also, Zimbabwe marks 37 years of independence today. A chilling video circulating on social media shows a horrifying and alarming campaign of terror in Burundi against opponents of the president's party. And we'll examine the causes and consequences of famine and how much is it man-made.
We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There is lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Zimbabwe marked 37 years of independence today. The country's persistent economic problems cast a shadow over the event this year. President Robert Mugabe promised better times ahead. Sebastian Mofu has the story for VOA from Harare.
Zimbabwe marked 37 years of independence Tuesday. The country's persistent economic problems cast a shadow over the event this year. President Robert Mugabe promised better times ahead. Sebastian Mofu has the story for VOA from Harare. Text.
And you who are here, I say, long live Zimbabwe. Long live our freedom and independence. Congratulations and I thank you.
That is a frail-looking Robert Mugabe winding up his speech Tuesday at a stadium in the capital. He addressed more than 50,000 people gathered to mark Zimbabwe's 37 years of independence. In his speech, the president was hopeful that Zimbabwe's moribund agriculture-based economy will pick up thanks to above-average rainfall in the 2016-2017 growing season. The UN says about 4 million people in Zimbabwe remain dependent on food aid after a drought over the previous two growing seasons. Mugabe said Zimbabwe would have a, quote, bumper harvest, unquote, this year. He sought to show up support.
Comrades and friends, as we today celebrate our hard-won independence, I wish to urge you to remain vigilant. The enemy is ever ready to pounce on any signs of laxity and weakness on our part. We celebrate as a vigilant nation, even as we prepare for our economic general development. What we have done in the past to bring about unity is not enough.
Mugabe has led Zimbabwe since independence in 1980. He has announced plans to run again in March next year, but there are hints of political instability. The ruling ZANU-PF party is embroiled in serious fights over who will one day succeed the 93-year-old leader. His party is this month expected to expel one of his trusted top officials accused of secretly setting up structures to replace Mugabe. Pro-opposition political commentator Vince Musewe told VOA there is nothing to celebrate on Tuesday.
This country has gone 30 years backwards. Whether you look at social infrastructure, to jobs, you're looking at the quality of life. And it is shocking to actually get a president who can spend time actually talking about what is not there. My fear or my suspicion is that he's no longer aware of what is happening. And number two, he's been fed false information. He did not speak about the cash crisis. He did not speak about the fact that of unemployment. And he did not speak, you know, about the issues of food security. I mean, since 1980, everything has deteriorated.
Since last year, Zimbabwe has seen sporadic anti-government protests over the economy and human rights situation. For over a year now, the country is also experiencing a severe cash shortage. People can wait for their money at banks for hours or even days. Economists attribute the shortage to Zimbabwe's dwindling exports and government mismanagement. Zimbabwe abandoned its own currency in 2008 amid hyperinflation. The introduction last year of what the government calls bond notes, which trade on par with the US dollar, has not helped the situation. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says he is alarmed by what he calls a growing, widespread campaign of terror in Burundi being waged by government-backed militia against opponents of President Pierre Nkurunziza's party. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva for us with this report.
The UN Human Rights Office says a chilling video circulating on social media has laid bare the horrifying and alarming nature of the campaign of terror. Rupert Colville, spokesman for High Commissioner Zeid Ra'ad Al Hussein, says the video shows more than 100 members of the Imbonerakure, the government's youth wing, inciting violence. He says the young men are heard calling for opponents to be impregnated so they can give birth to Imbonerakure or for them to be killed.
These grotesque rape chants by the young men of the Imbonerakure across several provinces across Burundi are deeply alarming. Particularly because they confirm what we've been hearing from those who fled Burundi about a campaign of fear and terror by this organized militia.
When the video surfaced, the ruling CNDD-FDD party initially said it was fake and had been filmed outside Burundi. After admitting the footage was real, the party said youths at one rally sang a song that, quote, does not conform to the morals or ideology of the party. However, Colville says the video of this rally, which was released on April 5th, is not an isolated incident, but rather the tip of the iceberg. He says his office has documented 8 large rallies organized across Burundi where similar slogans inciting rape and violence against opponents have been chanted. Colville says senior government officials reportedly have been present at some of these rallies. While the terror campaigns are ongoing, Colville tells VOA, rapes, torture, and other serious human rights violations are continuing.
Some of the reports of torture are pretty horrendous. People being burned with hot knives, acid being poured over parts of their body, teeth broken with rifle butts, attacks on sexual organs, etc. So very grisly stuff.
Colville says security forces reportedly have participated in the systematic use of torture. High Commissioner Zaid is calling on the authorities in Burundi to prevent the abhorrent practice and to swiftly condemn the incitement to hatred and violence. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, and at 14 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe marks 37 years of independence today amid an economic crisis. The UN Human Rights Office says a chilling video on social media shows what it calls a horrifying campaign of terror being waged in Burundi by government-backed militia against opponents of the president's party. The UN World Food Programme warns it could run out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in northeast Nigeria. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
And as we just mentioned, the UN World Food Programme says it is alarmed at the prospect of running out of money to aid the nearly 5 million people affected by a hunger crisis in northeastern Nigeria. The crisis does not just affect Nigeria, the nation's top humanitarian official says. It impacts families across the Lake Chad Basin. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The World Food Programme is sounding the alarm over a severe funding shortfall in Nigeria that could endanger the lives of 4.7 million people affected by hunger in the nation's volatile northeast. The UN agency has received just under 15% of the $416 million it needs for its operations in Nigeria this year. In the next 5 or 6 months, says WFP Acting Regional Communications Officer Elizabeth Bryant, the UN agency needs $200 million to keep feeding Nigeria's hunger-stricken population. Bryant spoke to VOA from Dakar. She says experts predict that the annual lean season, usually the waiting period before the next harvest, could come early this year, as soon as May, after 2 years of failed harvests in the agricultural northeast. And so, she says, the funding needs are urgent.
We need it now so that we can do, for example, when it comes to the hunger season, the lean season I was discussing, that we have food lined up, that we're prepared. And in fact, the food is there. We just need to have the money to be able to buy it and distribute it to people in need.
The agency, she says, has contingency plans, which include reducing rations. She says officials are appealing to donors to act now to prevent the situation from becoming a famine.
At that point, a lot of lives have already been lost. And the other thing is that it costs a lot more financially to react to a famine than to try to avoid one.
Nigeria is one of four nations that are on the brink of famine. Yemen, South Sudan, and Somalia are also facing dire hunger in what UN officials say is the largest humanitarian crisis since the international body's creation. The insecurity and mass displacement caused by the now 7-year Boko Haram conflict in northeastern Nigeria has brought farming to a near halt. Some parts of Borno State have been off-limits to aid workers due to fighting. The Nigerian government's chief humanitarian coordinator, Dr. Ayoade Alakija, told VOA that this is not just a threat to Africa's most populous nation. It's a threat to millions of families in Chad, Niger, and Cameroon who rely on Nigerian agriculture.
Because these people would farm, and they would farm their millet and their maize and their beans, and it would be exported to those other countries, and that was how they got their livelihoods. But also, that was how those countries got their food.
In an op-ed published in the French newspaper Le Monde Friday, the UN Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in Nigeria warned that a suspension of relief efforts in northeastern Nigeria could render the area more vulnerable to the spread of extremism. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Parts of South Sudan are experiencing famine, and Somalia, northeast Nigeria, and Yemen are at risk of famine as millions face starvation. But why does famine still happen? And why are some countries so unprepared for it? Development experts are looking at ways to break the cycle. Suresh Babu is a senior research fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute, or IFPRI, in Washington. He says there is much to learn from past disasters. I asked him about the causes and consequences of famine and how much of it is man-made.
Famines don't come with a particular cause. It is a combination of several confounding factors that act at a particular point in time. The food system as a whole, if it is not resilient when it receives certain shocks, then it is going to lead to a situation, famine-like conditions, and then when intervention is not there, and full-blown famine is going to be there.
How does one build resilient food systems?
We have been talking about resilience for a while, but no one has analytically been able to get their hands on what are the causes and what are the indicators of resilience. We do have some understanding of the factors that contribute to the resilience of the food system. For example, a resilient food system needs to be developed over time with proper policy intervention. If the policies are failing the food systems over the period, the resilience is weakened. The resilience, in essence, is how the communities or the food system as a whole can bounce back when it receives a shock like a weather shock or a conflict-like shock or environmental degradation and so on. To give an example, the Ethiopian government in the last 20 years have been able to manage their drought-like conditions without getting into a famine situation because they built their resilience through right type of policies that help the farmers to stay in place and build their productivity, and also the policies that can help the vulnerable groups in terms of social safety nets. The second aspect is building the resilience of the institutions that conduct research on agricultural productivity, land degradation, sustainability of natural resources. That requires continuous intervention. But in the time of conflict, those institutions fall apart.
What role do politics and economics play in where famine develops and how severe that famine will be?
That's a fantastic question, because this is also another area that we have not given adequate attention. Conflict-driven famine that we are seeing currently in Yemen and South Sudan, Somalia and Northeast Nigeria is absolutely a political economy issue. We need to understand who are the actors and players who are coming to this conflict and what interest they have. We can't really stop certain conflict, but at the same time, how can we save lives? How can we build the communities so that they don't have to be displaced? And they don't have to be destroying their livelihoods.
So based on what we know and what we don't know, how much famine and drought, in your estimation, can we still expect to see in Africa in the near future? And how much of it can be prevented?
Except for this very war-torn kind of situation and conflict situation where humanitarian aid even cannot go there to support the communities there, for the most part, famines are preventable. We know the causes. When the drought hits, we know how to intervene in terms of humanitarian aid. But also because of the displacement, because of the infrastructure failure, even in urban areas, you are going to see a lot of contamination of water and sanitation issues. And how do we bring in the health along with the food to save lives? And quickly, we need to think about how can we stabilize the community. The basic infrastructure they need to have, and also the innovations in terms of technology, they can we provide quick seeds that they can have some food where they are based. Assessment of the vulnerability. Who is vulnerable? Where they are? How can we get the food to them? And how much food can be delivered? And targeting the right type of communities is very important. And we have learned quite a bit about how to do that. But at the same time, we do miscalculate the food availability sometimes. That's because we do not have the right type of capacity in the national systems. Without waiting for an humanitarian assistance team landing from Geneva or Rome or from London or Washington, and that capacity as a development community we have not built, and we have failed in that over the years. When we do not have the capacity on the ground, then is where the situation gets worse. By the time the international humanitarian team arrives with all the procedures, we are into the famine-like condition. And that happens time and again.
And that was the International Food Policy Research Institute's Suresh Babu speaking to me in Washington.
A former OPEC president says countries should not rely too heavily on oil production to fund their national budgets and development projects. Dr. Chakib Khalil, who's also Algeria's former energy minister, says oil prices are too volatile. For example, low prices helped push Nigeria into a recession last year. Khalil spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the need for oil-producing countries to diversify their economies.
Well, I recommend that all countries that are oil dependent get out of the oil dependence, because sooner or later they will have to do it But if they do it later, it will be at a greater cost socially and politically. So as long as they have the foreign currency reserves and they have the time, you know, to diversify their economy from oil dependence to, for example, diversify to be more dependent on agriculture, on industry, on fishing, on tourism and services, it would be better in the long term. But this requires a program to carry out, you know, to be successful in getting out of oil dependence.
Libya was generating a decent amount of income from oil before the civil war, but it did not develop the society. Now its oil revenues are threatened by the ongoing civil war. What kind of economic future does Libya have if a peaceful solution is reached?
Well, I think Libya still has big oil reserves. They used to produce 1.5 million barrels per day. Now they're producing only 400 or 600,000 barrels per day. So if the situation stabilizes, then they're going to have still possibilities to increase their production to at least 1.5 million barrels per day. And this will provide them the income to rebuild, you know, the infrastructure, you know, the schools, the universities, and water distribution system, and to build the infrastructure for living for the people of Libya.
But Libya has very small population. Would Libya need in the future to diversify its resources and stop depending and reliance on oil also?
Yes, it is very important that countries, you know, even if they have a small population, diversify their economy, because their oil is not staying in the country forever. So sooner or later, they will have to prepare a plan to diversify the economy so that it would help them have a sustainable development in the long term, taking into account the increase in population, the increase of quality of living of the population. They're going to need good education, improve the education, improve the infrastructure, and develop resources that will allow them to avoid depending on oil in the long term.
That's former OPEC President Chakib Khalil. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News. That's coming up at 16:30 UTC.
And for all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.